Cuando le compras a tu hijo el outfit de regreso a clases de JCPenney que tanto quería por tan solo $34, no solo le estás comprando el outfit de regreso a clases de JCPenney que tanto quería por tan solo $34, estás comprando una mañana en la que tu hijo va a estar listo a tiempo por tan solo $34. La prueba está en el recibo. Sí, es JCPenney. El precio incluye el 20% de descuento con el cupón. Oferta válida hasta el 22 de agosto. Detalles en la tienda o jcp.com.
The show must go on. So who cares if we're all dead? We'll just do 90210 the zombie years.
Isn't that what we're doing already?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, BH90210 edition. Today's episode, season one, episode three, The Photo Shoot. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Shall we talk about season one, episode three, The Photo Shoot?
Why not?
Okay. Here's what happens in the episode. When the first photo shoot for the series revival gets rescheduled due to Ian punching out a writer and starting a fire on the set, the cast enters group therapy with Carol Potter, known to show fans as Cindy Walsh, now actually a marriage and family therapist for real in Culver City. We have, we'll link to her practice in the show notes. She's not taking new clients right now, but I love that I found it. I mean, good for her.
Yeah, and she looks amazing.
She does.
Ooh. I do wish that she had rolled out a lasagna in the therapy or made a giant salad, but you can't have everything. This is of a piece, in my opinion, with Anne Jackie Taylor Gillespie becoming Reverend Gillespie.
Yep.
In its way, helping professions. Anyway, other than that, it is easier to break the episode down by character as opposed to plot line, because each of these boners is siloed in his or her own story. So here we go.
All right. Freaked out by the dismembered doll, Jenny sends Kyler to stay with her stepfather and hires a full-time bodyguard, Wyatt. He's played by a bad actor who is cute and flirty, and we're clearly supposed to think they're going to end up boning. Although when it comes out in therapy that Jenny and Jason had sex in Vegas, Jenny also admits, maybe only to Tori so far, that she might really have feelings for him.
Jason is the
for Jason
in question.
Yes. Alas. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Meanwhile, Brian's stalker, Zach, has started working as Brian's assistant, immediately ingratiating himself by pretending not to know who Shay is. And then when Shay briefly loses track of one of their kids and Zach finds him, Zach takes the blame, saying he'd left the door open. But Shay knows it was her fault, so mission accomplished. Now they trust Zach completely. He even gets his own set of house keys. What could go wrong?
She does admit to Brian that it was her. She doesn't actually let him take the blame forever, but yeah. Christine gets Gabby to admit that her inspiration for Andrea's queer storyline is her own life. Since Christine is also queer, she encourages Gabby to sign up for a dating app for research, though Gabby doesn't get any matches because, due to privacy fears, her profile photo is her elbow. In the end, Christine matches with Gabby and asks her out for a drink.
I kind of want a spinoff about just the two of them. And
yep.
Also, Gabby is being so first couple of seasons Andrea about this whole plot line and about Tinder and everything. It's really pretty funny, actually.
Yep.
Less funny, although we'll get into our analysis later.
Yep.
Ian is all broken up about the end of his marriage and drinking way too much. He also idly compliments Anna Blakemore, a woman he thinks is a PA, but who turns out to be a writer on the show. When she tells him it's inappropriate, he goes into a spiral, whining that no one's going to want to date him because he doesn't know how to talk to women anymore. Okay.
Right. In the current climate, in this economy, anyway, Jason confronts Camille about her miracle pregnancy given his newly discovered sterility. She gives him a not especially detailed story about how it happened, but then Jack Carlisle, the writer, makes himself known by writing it into Steve's story in the pilot script. Smooth. Jason outs the affair and Camille's child's paternity. Steve punches Jack, causing the aforementioned fire. Jason demands that Jack get fired.
And even though Tori hates confrontation, Christine makes her fire him, and Tori eventually does it. When Nate gets jealous about Tori working with her old boyfriend Brian again, he gets her to promise they won't have any love scenes, which is fine with us for other reasons. But with Anna closing the episode pitching Brian on making Donna and David, quote, hot and heavy, once again with the vintage phrasings, writers, really, that's obviously not a promise that Tori can keep. Tori also treks to Peru and climbs a mountain to talk Shannon into signing on for the series, and Shannon does it.
Also, Anna replaces Jack Carlisle as the new head writer and establishes firm boundaries about how Ian should talk to her.
And Jason admits to Camille that she's not the only one in their marriage who cheated.
And we have questions, starting with, it's cute for the show, but should Carol be treating her former co-stars?
I mean, should anyone be treating these people in a group? Like, I mean, it's an extremely slippery slope, all of this. that's happening. So, yeah. And then I mean, they're all just sort of like streaming out of the room. And she's like, so, Tori, we're still here. Do you want to, I don't know. Like, the whole thing is very strange. I mean, it's not uninteresting, but it's weird and dumb also.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like for an occupational therapy perspective, it kind of makes sense for a group of people like this to be having some kind of guidance. But yeah, like formal therapy, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
It may never come up again. We don't know.
There are some HIPAA issues there. But on the other hand, you could just as easily chalk this up to like, I don't know, someone that they might hire to do a team building exercise.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So the show also has not mentioned that Jason and Christine dated, and not just for a while. Like, they dated for 5 years. So
yeah, I think they were engaged, actually. It was a while. Yeah.
So I'm kind of surprised. I mean, I wonder if they haven't brought it up because they assume that this is something that viewers didn't know. But it hasn't come up. It's not part of either of their stories.
Yeah. And that is very odd because I don't know. Maybe we understand who the show is for better than the show does.
Right.
Because I just don't understand, like, the things that they won't include are strange to us. And I can't imagine that anyone's like, oh, this looks funny, I'll check it out. Like, someone who didn't watch the original show or has never watched, who cares? So why wouldn't you find a way to write that in? But on the other hand, they've made up like fake spouses for all of these people. So it's impossible to deduce what they might be trying to do with that.
Yeah. Well, this is the same thing that we keep talking about. It's like the spouses are fake to greater and less degrees.
Right.
You know, like Nate and Tori are very close to Dean and Tori, although thus far Nate has not tried stand-up comedy. Cough.
Oh, gosh.
Unlike Dean, but...
Well, look, we'll get in later. We'll get into an Instagram message I received today from someone wanting me to know that Megan Fox was grabbing Brian Austin Green's package at lunch. Like, thank you for that.
That one wasn't me.
No, it wasn't you.
Usually it is. Okay, well, anyway, back to Jason and Christine. They've made Christine queer. She says this. She didn't say it in the last episode, but does here with regard to the Andrea scene, as we mentioned, or the Gabby scene. And as of an interview last year, Elise did not identify as queer. Who knows if that's changed since then? I did Google if she came out or something that's not public. But at the time of this interview, which we'll also link in the show notes, she knew that Emily had a passionate queer following. It's very similar to the framing of the story is by a queer woman. And she's like, you know, that was my awakening moment, similar to how the bartender addresses Gabby in the series premiere of this, which is cute.
Right.
And I also appreciate that, like, making that choice about her character, they didn't also have that piggyback onto like, well, I wasn't queer and then I dated Jason and blah, blah, blah. Like, they haven't gone for that easy joke, which, you know, good for them, because the old show would have.
Yeah. And frankly, so would I. I mean, but it really has nothing to do with that. It would just like turn me off of kissing forever. It would have nothing to do with sexuality. So
God, yes. All right. So how are we supposed to feel, do you think, about Ian's whole scared of women's hysterical accusations storyline?
I think we are supposed to feel sorry for him.
I do too, and I don't like it.
I don't either, and I don't understand why. I'm sure I know this actress who plays the writer Anna from like something else and not just looking like another actress, Sarah. She has like an actually excellent resting bitch face, but that's why it's unfortunate. Like they cast this person who looks like this other actor. I will Google it in a second.
Okay.
And then she's directed to be, I think, strident about it in a way that is supposed to put us on Ian's side. But I think this is another place where they're like crossing the streams with the Steve character.
Yeah.
Who is just this like well-meaning but canceled id boner. So I think we're supposed to feel bad for him that he's a, you know, 90s guy in a teens world. And I don't. And I don't want to waste time on this conversation in this show, talking about this show.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like he's 60, you know, it's not like he grew up in a totally different time. Like even toward the end of the series, there would have been conversations where it's like, you can't do that. Like you can't be telling PAs
he's from
they're
New
cute.
Jersey. Please respect our cultural differences.
Okay, just kidding. You're right.
No.
Your culture is not my costume. I understand. But yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah, it's not cute. I mean, he comes around at the end. Like, I guess that's how it's supposed to save it. That he's like, you are right and I will do better. But the fact that it's even part of the story is like, why?
Well, and he just seems kind of aggrieved by it. And you have to wonder if Ziering didn't ask for that somehow.
Maybe.
But he's just like to make a point about how this political correctness has gone too far. Like, I don't really think that's something that you needed to do.
Right. And I don't think that the show's ultimate point is that it has gone too far. Like
no,
I said,
I don't
he
so
comes
either.
Around at the end. Like he's shown to be wrong, but it's also that we're supposed to feel sad for him that like this is a lesson he has to learn.
Yeah.
Even though all it would have taken is for him to be like, hey, can you bring me a coffee? And she could have said, I'm not a PA. And he would have said, oh, I'm so sorry. Also, the coffee is like directly behind him while this is even happening. So it's like, go get your own, drunkie. Whatever.
Seriously.
Moving on.
Yeah. How do we feel in turn about there's this whole thing where Jason is bunking at Gabby's house because he's mad at Camille. And Jenny's like, you know, don't be an idiot. Like, first of all, you cheated too. And second of all, you could have a kid. Like, yeah, it's not your kid, but biologically, like, who cares? Like, this is an opportunity for you to, for your marriage to emerge stronger and blah, blah, blah. You can create a family or whatever, which is like, what? Like, it just feels like the show is urging Jason to get back with Camille so that he can have any child because that's what makes a family real or whatever. I just don't, I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it's like, what? We don't care about Camille anyway, so why not just cut her loose?
Yeah, the problem is that it's trying to have it both ways. In the series premiere, it's established both that they tried to have a child for a long time and couldn't. So this is like, this was something they wanted. But the same episode also establishes that he's like, you know, texting her from Vegas, I miss you. And she's like, eyes on the prize. This is, you know, this is your career rehab moment, blah, blah, blah. So it's like the show hasn't decided how we're supposed to feel about her.
Right.
So I mean, it's true. And it makes sense that it's Jenny having the speech of like, you know, a blended family is still a family and whatever, like you can figure it out if that's something that's important to you, because she is someone who has had like children with different spouses. And, you know, from what we've seen, they all get along. It's established that Kyler goes to stay with her stepfather, not even her biological father. So like, you know, whatever it takes to make a family that way, she knows how to do it. And that part of it made sense
to village
me.
And that's fine. Like, that's not the part that I'm like, what?
Yes.
It's just
no,
like,
I agree.
It just seems like, well, you know, there's definitely this idea that, first of all, the fact that Camille is pregnant is a done deal and she will not be terminating that situation.
Right.
But also, you know, the show still, I think, does not understand who is watching it and what we're all doing here. And like, if you want to put in these placeholder spouses, you can, and it'll work or it won't. But the fact that Ian caught his spouse cheating and then she's like off screen, great, fine. The fact that Kyler, because they didn't want to pay the actor, was sent to stay with her stepfather, good. Yes. Like, we're not here for those people.
Right.
And I'm definitely not here for a, I don't know, PSA about sort of writing your own marriage ticket. Like, I think that's absolutely true, and I wouldn't judge people in that real life situation, but that's not why we're watching this show. So
no. And it also seems obvious that, like, the end game for the series, like, maybe they're going to try and play out the string in hopes that there's more than just these six episodes, judging by the ratings. We'll see. But it does seem like they're trying to put Jenny and Jason together, in which case, like, they need to figure out what the deal is with Camille and Jason then, because, as you say, this is a waste of time. All right.
Well, and now we're halfway through, so.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Do
we buy that? Do we buy that Tori would be mad at Jenny for days for not having told Tori that Jenny and Jason slept together? Because it's not like anyone else knew, and gossip is gossip whenever you hear.
Well, and she, yeah, no, I don't buy that. And that she would not be responding to phone calls.
Yeah.
That I don't believe at all.
Yeah. This is not
she might be mad and like yell and be like, I can't believe you didn't tell me. That sucked. Then she'd be over it. Because.
Right. Because like then she'd be like, tell me everything.
Yes. Like, I'm too curious to stay angry about it.
Exactly. Finally, Tori in Peru, petting a llama, summiting Shannon's mountain with her little rolly suitcase, coming back to LA in an authentic poncho. It was a little funny. It worked on me.
It was just regular funny.
Yeah. Okay.
She knows how to do it. Also, there's this scene where like she's just going through like a little town, like marketplace, and she gives this burro that she's like, hi, like she knows him. So good. It would have been even funnier if it had been a little deer, but oh well.
Oh yeah, deer.
She is quite charming and her outfits are fucking everything.
They are. I liked her Jenny's outfit that too. She climbed the mountain in, and I like the outfit she came back in. Both very good.
And everything Jenny Garth is wearing and Jenny Garth's boobs, which I think are not factory originals, but excellent work. I guess she went to Tiffany's guy because... looking good.
Yeah, the scene where she finally gets sick of calling Tori and getting her calls ignored and like comes around a corner is like boo to scare her, like to force a confrontation. She's wearing like a sparkly yellow blouse that like four people alive could wear, and she wears it. She looks great.
And you wouldn't think she'd be one of them, but
Yeah, that hair color, that shade that she has of blonde now is really working for her. Well, there's more to come, but first, we have a birthday message for Jen.
Just Jen, not Jenny.
Not Jenny.
Melissa has let us know that her sister-in-law, Jen, is the smartest person in her family, a beloved aunt, soon to be married, and legendarily good at budgeting.
Jen also apparently traumatized her brother for life with the spring dance episode, which Jen and their elder sister, Lori, taped when it aired and watched a lot. So with that in mind, we have a special list of spring dance-themed wishes just for Jen.
Number one, we hope someone follows Kelly's lead and bestows upon Jen a very special radish corsage. So trendoid.
Number two, if Jen prefers to spend her day as Andrea did, at home watching slasher movies or whichever genre Jen likes best, no one better give her any guff.
Number three, if Jen chooses to augment her celebration with a few discreet pulls off a flask... Discreet, not like Steve's. That is her right.
Number four, if Jen wants to wild out on the dance floor with some extremely acrobatic moves, she should learn from David's mistakes and take her bolo tie off first.
And number five, Jen's wedding is in May 2020, still a ways off, but we still hope no one shows up to it wearing the same outfit as Jen.
From all of us here and from Melissa,
happy birthday, Jen!
All right, we have a breakdown into some categories, starting with continuity cop. Ian, with the pro forma compliments, I felt was a very Rush energy.
Yes, me too.
And it touched me. As much as it was not appropriate, it was cute.
Very Rush. And if that amazing moonstone ring had been present, we really would have known the man was with us.
Yes. Also that they're the photo shoot in question is that they're recreating the famous cuddle puddle photo with all of them like lying with their heads on each other's hips and waists and stuff, which was a classic, still memorable today.
Yep, indeed. And even without Luke Perry, it still worked.
Yeah, well, he, yes, conveniently was in like the top corner of it. So they were able to just sketch him out in the mock-up.
Cough. Yeah, or just squeeze the margins a little. Aww.
Yep. R.I.P. We also get this from Christine, clip two.
Have you reached out to Joey Tata yet?
Confirmation of pronunciation. Thank you.
I really need it to be Tata, but I'm going to accept this and try to move on. If there's just something about Tata, like, oh, I don't know.
There's also a scene where Jenny is in her kitchen drinking coffee and she does not use the handle of her mug. That's just for you, Sarah.
Yeah, I think it was. I'm waiting for the pockets from Jason. I'm looking very closely. If anyone has spotted that and I've missed it, give us a heads up at AWT90210 on Twitter. But I don't think he has done it. Possibly
I don't think he's worn jeans, really. Yeah,
or not ones that were so tight that he couldn't fit all of his fingers against it once. Oh, God.
All right. We have some pandering to Gen X and to your hosts specifically.
Yes. The cold open where it's always like a nightmare sequence, apparently. And this time it's Jason's and he's in the peach pit as Brandon. And the way he's shot, he looks so teeny.
Yeah.
Like, it's really kind of a troll, literally.
Yes. Christine also speaks for us. Clip three.
You got famous so young you never grew or evolved as people, which is so repellent and yet so deliciously fascinating.
Well, I do what I can.
I love that Tori gets that line because it's true. She knows what she's for. Like,
yeah, she does.
She knows it.
She does.
And in general, I have to say, Christine seems to be having so much fun just bossing everyone around and yelling at them, like acting like they're bullshit. It's great.
I mean, this is like, I had some issues with her sort of like, it's very individualistic, her smirky delivery. And I didn't necessarily think it was great in her initial run of episodes, at least in season two. Like it, it could land a little like inexperienced.
Yeah.
But here it really works because I feel like she's smirking, like she's winking at us and it, it just works with the whole, like whatever the zeitgeist is here, it works with it. And she looks amazing. That hair is like, I'm like, can I get away with that? No, I can't. I'm just going to look at hers. She looks great.
So good. We also get a shot of Jason Ben Stoning Jenny over his glasses just for Buncey. The famed Michael Moriarty move from Law and Order.
He looked kind of foxy.
He did. The beard really suits him.
I know. I mean, he's still much too little, but this is... There are glimmers of like, oh, right. That's why I was a Brandon guy back in the day.
The show has also learned that drunk people should drink water, not coffee, because Jason and Brian go to rescue Ian from fake Soho House where he's getting wasted and they bring him water instead of coffee. Good job.
Speaking of the readers, I think we had a clip about that. No,
we do. I was going to put them. I moved them from mentally from the dock. Let's put them both back to back because these are both very I feel seen moments. Clip four and five.
This is surreal, right?
What, that we're so old we all need readers?
Thank God for vodka, though. Am I right?
Absolutely.
See what you did there.
Yeah, see, it's good, right?
Yeah. Okay, first, the glasses, because we do all need readers. We are old. We have old eyes. I'm only disappointed they didn't call them cheaters, because I always think that's cute.
There is a nice bit of business where Brian, who apparently is refusing to give in on this point, is holding the script like as far as possible from his face and squinting at it.
Yep.
Get me.
Yes. But the vodka exchange with absolutely the bad puns, it's like, oh, they've been reading our Slack. Great. Like, these are kind of stupid jokes we make for ourselves and no one else. Like, okay, fine.
Yeah. Future scholars. Hello.
Mm-hmm. And then we get a little Elastica into the closing credits. Who could be mad at that? No one.
Mm.
All right. On to Blonde's self-fluffing. We get Tori once again pushing through Nate's doubts about her reasons for doing the show, maybe mostly because it will require him to step up as the primary parent.
I considered clipping this because Tori had some pretty good subtle burns in it, mm-hmm. but she had enough cute moments that you'd already clipped. But
yeah.
He's like, well, what about me? What about our kids? Which what he doesn't say is, you know, what about me who will now have to watch mm-hmm. all six of our kids? And she's like, yeah, that's hard. And then she just sits there.
Bye.
And yep. I was like, this is exactly, if Tori had written into The Vine, my old advice column, this is exactly what I would have told her to do. Like, acknowledge yep. his feelings and then don't try to fix it. So good for you.
Yep, 100%. However, we also get the head writer fired days into production because of Jason's drama, not because of either Blonde's micromanagement, which is what apparently mm-hmm. happened in real life. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
We also have Hazing the Freshman, speaking of bad parenting, making poor Lala Anthony as Shay play the negligent parent when she's opposite Brian Austin Green, documented deadbeat dad.
Oh, God. And there's even a whole scene where she's like forced to freak out about it to him. And he's like, you're a great mom. Don't worry about it. Everyone makes mistakes. Ugh. I'm like, oh, word.
Uh-huh.
Tell us more while you're writing a check. Oh.
Barf. We will close it up in just a second. But first, we have a birthday message for Jack.
Melissa tells us that her son Jack is athletic, smart, friendly, and outgoing, and probably the only almost 12-year-old boy in the world who's excited for the BH90210 reboot that we're talking about right now. I think you're probably right. He is also a Boy Scout who loves being outside and camping and hiking and whatnot, so for his birthday, we thought we would list 5 ways Jack could have helped the gang avoid various outdoorsy misadventures.
Oh boy, well, number one, Jack would have pointed out to Brandon that his wildly swinging feet were like 4 inches above a ledge when he was, quote, dangling from a, quote, precipice in the Dylan Guzzles airline bottles camping episode, and told him to plant feet and pull himself up instead of making a whole drama out of it.
Number two, also in that episode, he wouldn't have had shoes as dumb as Doc Martens on for a mountain hike. Dylan.
Number three, Jack would not blunder down a compromised hillside to harass a fawn during a wildfire because he is not a dumb baby like Donna.
Number four, Jack definitely knows better than to whiz on a sacred burial ground like Brandon and Dylan again. Who keeps letting these spoonhods outside? Seriously.
And number five, Jack's urge to show off on the slopes wouldn't get him stuck in a cave during a whiteout like Brandon and Susan.
I had myriad other Brandon examples, P.S. Moving on, the lesson here is that Jack, who also loves puns, is far more shelf-possessed.
Not sorry.
Than Brandon is when it comes to outdoor crises, and that he should reward himself with cake for this fact.
Happy birthday, Jack! All right, let us name our episode MVP. Tori, for the reasons we've already said, really yeah. funny and looks great.
And with an honorable mention to wardrobe generally, I am yeah. also really loving the Gabby necklace story.
Mm-hmm.
Well played.
Agree. Least valuable player.
Oh.
Ian, no one thinks you're cute. Glad you came along, around rather, but yeah, this is not a crisis that you should have had.
Yeah. I mean, Nate.
yeah, fair. Fucking Nate.
Trifly.
Mm-hmm. We also have a reading from the October 1993 sassy profile of Tori Spelling, poor Tori. Resuming, she began acting in school plays to get over her shyness. In second grade, we were doing Tom Sawyer, and I got the part of Becky Thatcher, so that was my first time on stage. It was so weird. I saw that audience and went out there and just hammed it up. Then I'd come off stage and be like this. She scrunches her shoulders together and rolls her eyes upward meekly. Oh, I know that look. The waiter comes over and Tori orders iced tea and chicken salad. Yes, she ate most of it. Ooh, God. I ask the inevitable question about whether she thinks her dad had anything to do with her getting her role as Donna on 90210. No, if he did, I would have been Kelly, right? She says. You'd be directing, I say. I'd be Brandon, she counters. Then Shannon would be your twin, the publicist interjects somewhat snidely. By the way, it's like taken as fact that everyone definitely did know who she was when she auditioned, even though she did it under a false name. Just saying. I just bought the People Collector's Edition about 90210, and it's like in there. So, okay, fact checked. Got
it's
it.
Canon. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I take this opportunity to ask what's going to happen on 90210 this season. When they go to college, she says in a conspiratorial tone, Kelly, Donna, and David get an apartment together. There'll be lots of storylines to focus around that. Three's Company type situations that'll be funny. Donna and David will continue with their DJ radio things. They're going to try out for the radio station at college. Will Donna have a college major? Tori confers with her publicist. They whisper urgently, like teammates on a game show, then come up for air. Some type of art field, says Tori. The arts, says the publicist. They both nod. Well, that turned out to be true, so good job, guys. End of excerpt.
All right, then. Next time on Again With This, BH 90210 edition, according to the Direct TV Guide, quote, when the table read serves up major disappointment, the cast bands together to try to rewrite the script, but can't come to an agreement on storylines. Shannon questions her decision to join the reboot.
Shannon, no!
Since it's already more than halfway through the episode run, Shannon should maybe throw the old questioning process into a higher gear, given that she just fucking got here. But anyway, since the screener gods keep us on our toes, we're not sure when the podcast on episode 4 will drop, but you can stay informed by subscribing to this podcast, by visiting our website at againwiththispodcast.com, and by following us on Twitter at AWT90210. And you can join our gang at our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm Eckhouse casting truther Sarah D. Bunting, and I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is emotional support llama Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Perimeter David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeperoni.